Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont and Yuri. We have a new world champion. Joan Mir is the 2020 title winner, and, you know, the fact that it's been wrapped up a round early is maybe the most surprising thing about this 2020 season, because that really didn't expect it.
Yeah, we finally have a new champion, which is... I think full credits to him, because he's been the most consistent rider of the grid in this completely abnormal season, and full credit to him. Yeah, I think after that first podium in Austria, he has been able to reach this consistency that was needed to get the title. I think every rider of the grid knew at the beginning what was needed to be up in the standings, but nobody was really able to do it other than Joan. So, yeah. Congratulations to him and to Suzuki. After 20 years, they got a new MotoGP title. They are celebrating the century of the company, 60 years involved on racing. So it's the perfect season for them.
Perfect is the key word there, because, yeah, like you say, perfect season for them. I think... You know, people have talked about it before this year, but the Suzuki is a perfect bike, as perfect as you can get. The team is perfect. You've got a great team boss there in Davide Brivio. You've got great riders in Joan and Alex Rins. You've got a great technical team. You've got a great test team. And all of that, we spoke about this before. You cannot forget the fact that Suzuki is operating on a smaller budget than all of its rivals. Look at Yamaha, for example. They have four bikes and not one of them could get close to the championship. Honda, four bikes, couldn't get close to the championship. Ducati, you know, has more bikes than anyone, couldn't get close to the championship. And yet there was Suzuki. Consistency, working intelligently, and with such a great rider in Joan Mir, and such a clever rider in Joan Mir as well.
I think, yeah, he has this strength and... his maturity, and he's only 23, which is crazy for me. I mean, if I think about it, when I had his age, it's crazy what I was thinking and what the way he speaks, the way he addresses to the people, the way he behaves, and yeah, the message, all the messages he sent, even after the race. Of course, somebody asked him about the, let's say, legitimacy of this title without the mark on racing. And he went right to the spot saying, listen, Mark was not kidnapped. I mean, so he was racing the first race. He made a mistake and the season was over for him, but it was not because anybody, kidnapped him so that's, it shows his character. I mean, he has a strong character, and the good thing is that he says this and everybody thinks, well, it makes sense, while this exactly the same words, if somebody else say it, maybe he can seems is cheeky, cocky, or you know what I mean. So
yeah, yeah.
In Mir's voice sounds completely logical.
Yeah, it was a great quote from Joan on Mark there, and it's something that's rumbled on all season, and it's really annoyed all of us, I think, because. Well, Joan hit the nail on the head. Mark was racing and he made a mistake, and that is racing. He made a brilliant point. He said, look, if you have to delegitimize my championship, then you have to go back and do the same for so many. And, you know, who's going to honestly sit there and say, ah, well, you know, Kevin Schwantz doesn't deserve his championship because Wayne Rainey got injured, or Wayne Rainey doesn't deserve the 92 championship because Mick Doohan got injured. It's nonsense. It's bollocks, basically. There's no such thing as an illegitimate championship unless the rider cheats. And as far as I'm aware, no rider has ever cheated to a world championship. So this is racing. Joan did the best job of anyone.
100%. I mean, he did what he needed to do to get the title. End of the story, full stop.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, look at the consistency. Six podiums across the season, one victory. Let's look at the Yamahas, for example. Fabio won those two races and then won one more. Didn't get another top five, I think, the rest of the season. Maverick was the same. He had two podiums and a win, and then that was it.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing about our sport. I mean, about this sport. I mean, we have many different ways to win.
Yeah.
So that's what makes this discipline maybe, I wouldn't say special, because we have these different ways of winning in most of the sports disciplines. But yeah, there's another example of that. I mean, you can win the title by winning 10 races or 12 races, depending on which season, and you can win this kind of title winning one race, which even if he wouldn't have won any race, I think the title would be totally deserved. So, end of the story.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, like you say, he did everything he needed to. It's the same argument we have in Formula One right now with Lewis Hamilton. Oh, he's got the best car. You can have the best car, but you can be a crap driver and not win. And Juan had the best bike, and he was one of the best riders. You know, just because you have the best tools doesn't mean necessarily you have to be the best rider to get the best from the best tools.
In the end, Valtteri Bottas has the same car than Lewis Hamilton, and we've seen, for example, yesterday's race. two different races from the Bottas and from Hamilton. So yeah, in the end, what we all say, no. Normally, the best riders or the best drivers end up in the best cars or the best bikes. So I think in that case, probably Suzuki is one of the most balanced bikes on the grid, but I wouldn't say it's the fastest one. So
it's maybe not the fastest one, but like you say, it's best balanced. Everything works as it should. Everything works together, and then the riders can work with that package. But going back to Juan, he may have won one race this season, but this is a championship that eight other riders have won a Grand Prix. It has been, and it wasn't like 2016 as such, where there was a lot of wet races and it was a bit more strange with the change to Michelin. It was a more, in a way, it was a more normal season. There was more dry races. Look at FP2 on Friday. 1 point, 7/10 covered 19 riders. This is how competitive MotoGP is right now. So to do what Joan did, to be as consistent, it almost elevates the achievement, because it's what I mean? It's such as the competitiveness of MotoGP now.
Yeah, the only thing is I would like to see Marquez in that equation. I would like to see his impact, because after what we've seen in Jerez before the crash, I mean that exhibition was, wow, was scary. I mean, so unfortunately, we haven't seen him since, but yeah, that's the only part missing. At least it's the only part I miss. The only piece that we don't really know. I mean, Mark would allow us to have the full picture, you know, because we all say, whoa, this is the competition is crazy, 7/10, 19 riders. Yes, but I would love to see Mark in that equation, because maybe his performance would change our perspective on that. But unfortunately, again, as Mir said yesterday, I mean, after the race, we cannot change the past.
That race was difficult for him. He said afterwards it was a nightmare because the bike just wasn't working as it should. And he really struggled, but he came through to seventh, and it was a really smart ride, as we've seen from Mir. But what I liked was his comments afterwards. We spoke about this before, how down to earth he is. And, you know, Jorge Lorenzo asked him a question, how are you going to party? And he said, look, I can't really party. It would be irresponsible. People are dying from this disease. I can't go out and party. And for a 23-year-old to say that, I mean, like you said a minute ago, you know, when you were 23, you weren't really thinking about those things. And I understand that because I'm 24 now. What a great ambassador for MotoGP is Joan Mir.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, coming back to the race, I think in the end, he was a bit acting before the race, because after the race, when he was celebrating the title, when he was in the media, all the media activities, he said, listen, I was much more nervous than before. Immediately he says, well, it is not a bad thing, but I was much more nervous than normal. So in the end, I think that race was not the classic race of Joan. I think he would have been much in front, much, you know, fighting, I don't know, maybe for the fourth, fifth place with his teammate. But yeah, I think yesterday it's understandable that he was feeling the pressure a lot. And in the end, it happened what, you know, it was like, I remember in a different way, but it remembers when Mark got the first title in 2013 in Valencia as well. So he was racing in a different way. I mean, it was not Mark on the bike. It was not the classic Mark on the bike. Now, I'm 100% convinced that if next year it happens the same and Joan is able to fight for the title in one specific race, he would be more relaxed than last Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's talk about the rest of the race, because it was a fantastic battle up the front for the victory between Franco Morbidelli and Jack Miller. And this is the third win for Morbidelli. Mm-hmm. On the 2019 Yamaha, he's now the highest placed Yamaha in the championship in second. It was another disaster for the 2020 bikes. Quartararo crashed. Vinales said the maximum was 10th. Can Yamaha be happy with this situation? Because, I mean, what we've been hearing from the riders all weekend was that they made a mistake in the pre-season selecting this bike. Vinales has been going on about how he said, the 2019 was what I wanted, or that style of bike. What has to happen with Yamaha now? Because this isn't a great situation.
I won't probably be so popular now regarding what I'm going to say, but I have the feeling that and Valentino in the end says that, then it's, I mean, of course the bike has an impact in the equation, and probably the 2020 bike has positives or more positives than or the 2019 bike has some positives and some negatives in compared with the 2020 bike. But in the end, I think is that Frank Morbidelli is in the best shape ever. Is showing his at his best. I mean, it's the best version that we've seen from Franco Morbidelli. I mean, we've seen in Valencia last weekend, we've seen a new version of him in MotoGP, very aggressive in that crazy last lap with fighting with Miller. So, yeah, I think it's just now he believes in himself more than ever. And yeah, this confidence allows him to do things that he have never done before.
Well, yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Franco called that the best race of his career. He knew he could fight, but he'd never done it at the front in MotoGP. So I think, you know, that was a big, big confidence boost for him. But it's, yeah, the whole, I mean, looking at the other Yamahas, it's just, they're lost and they don't know what to do.
But if you speak with different people, from Petronas, from the official team, in the end, it's not that the factory team, they have forgotten to set up the bike. And it's not that they have a magician in the Petronas team with Ramon Forcada. I would say that Ramon Forcada is a kind of magician, but I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, for sure he has a lot of experience and his knowledge is quite a lot, but I would say that it's more probably rider related than, I mean, Valentino has been out for two races in Aragon, and then he came back. Then in the first race in Valencia, he only did five laps. So Valentino, it was a bit out of the game. But with Maverick and Fabio, we've seen them saying the same things. They are completely down. They are completely they're lacking of confidence. They don't know where to go. They don't know which kind of bike they're looking for. So to me, it sounds a bit strange than Franco Morbidelli with last year's bike has that. I mean, I don't see last year's Yamaha as the benchmark.
Yeah, for sure.
So
it's interesting because Rossi talked about it. He said, I don't remember there being a big difference between the two bikes. But Fabio said the complete opposite. He said, for me, the jump was quite big. And on the 2019 bike, I was able to be more consistent. And I think the results from last year do certainly back that up because he had more podiums last year than he did this year. Okay, he didn't have any wins, but... obviously there's a rider preference thing is there as well, but if we compare the Yamaha to the Suzuki, it's clear that the Yamaha doesn't really have a good base setup, and that if they come into a weekend struggling, then it's very hard for them to find a way to not struggle because they don't have anything to fall back on.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I would say that the only good base setup is the one from the Suzuki. Because Honda has shown even more ups and downs, and Ducati even more. So I would say that probably Suzuki is the right one. And Valentino said yesterday, listen, I think that the differences between Suzuki and Yamaha is that Suzuki has learned better how to adapt to the new tires.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. It's not me. It's Valentino. So
yeah. I think Valentino said something interesting to Italian television as well. I think he mentioned something about how other manufacturers in recent years have had changes within the team, within the structure. Yamaha has had that, but it does seem to me, and this is just my personal opinion, that there needs to be maybe a fresh perspective within Yamaha, because rider confidence in the team doesn't seem very high, particularly after what happened with the engines. Maverick was very critical of this. He said, look, we made mistakes and we've lost. We keep throwing away championships because we make mistakes. What do you make of that situation? Do you think Yamaha, there needs to be a change within management perhaps?
Well, we've been listening that, we've been hearing that sounds for many years, but still I don't think it's easy for them to find this link because I mean Lynn Jarvis has been there forever, and after, I mean, we have Mayo Menegali, so I don't know. I think that, yeah, the feeling is that something needs to be changed, but I'm not 100% convinced that needs to be that part, because in the end, when you ask them, they say, no, listen, it's our Japanese people who made a mistake. And when you ask different people from Yamaha, they say, well, yeah, but so if the Japanese people make a mistake, why do we need the management? I mean, we need the management to say, listen, maybe there's a misinterpretation of this thing. So it's difficult. It's difficult because I don't really know at the moment the level of confidence or trust between the Japanese side and the non-Japanese side, which to me is one of the keys for understand this situation.
That's a very interesting point you make, and it leads me on to my next question. So do you think then that maybe the problem is that Yamaha, the Italian side of the team where the team is based, doesn't work well with the parent company? When you compare that with what Suzuki are doing, even what Honda are doing, it seems like they're much more joined. And even if you look at it even from the point of the test team as well, how Yamaha has handled that, it's still very much handled within Japan, even though they had the European rider. It hasn't worked that way.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, I would say, because I've asked this question to Maverick after the race and say, listen, are you asking what are they doing for next year? Because he was repeating, no, I'm only focused on next year. I'm only focused on trying to make the bike better for next year. And I asked him, okay, you are focused on that, but what's Yamaha doing? What do you know that they are doing? What they tell you that they are doing? And he says, well, I prefer not to ask. What? So I think it's just because he's in a very low mood at the moment, but I think probably they will need to change, let's say, the communication between both sides. Otherwise, it's difficult to make it happen. I remember when Mark won, I think it was his second or third title, there was this documentary and they had a problem with the Japanese people, the communication problem with Japanese people. And from then on, when they realized and when they fixed that problem, the communication was much more fluid. And it is what it is. I mean, the communication between the, let's say, Japanese world and to the European world is not easy, because they are two completely different worlds. So you need to establish safe environment to communicate, and you have to send the message, and the message has to arrive on its complete sense.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because this is what Valentino said was why Suzuki was so successful this year, was because this is what Brivio was able to do, was able to have that synergy between the Italian side and the Japanese side. I think that's very interesting that he made that point, and I think that's sort of maybe a little bit of a coded message to Yamaha to say, look, this is what should be happening.
Yeah, and I would say that even more clear of that, when we ask Valentino, is there any change coming next year because you are leaving the factory team, in terms of, I mean, the things you are asking for next year's bike? I mean, how confident you are that Yamaha will work in that direction? And he said, listen, I'm not 100% sure how much they have listened to me in the last years. So even Vale is really open on that. I mean, he doesn't know how the Japanese part of Yamaha trust on what he tells them.
Mm-hmm. Just finally on Yamaha, because perhaps, and this is something Maverick said, is perhaps what they need is someone that's quite direct when it comes to the bike, that will say what's wrong with the bike and isn't afraid to say that. And it sounds like that person might be Cal Crutchlow, because of course he's going to be the Yamaha test rider next year. And well, first of all, what's your thoughts on that? Because obviously it's sad that Cal is not going to race, but I think it's a great, great move for Yamaha to get Cal on the bike and to be the test rider.
Yeah, if the test team works properly, yes, 100%. But I would like to be that happening because the Yamaha test team has been doing rounds and rounds and rounds for a few years. And I mean, the European one. And I would like to, I would love to see this test team working properly. I think that Cal is still fast and it can be a really useful rider in terms of developing the bike. But you need to concentrate and you need to invest in that test team, which Yamaha really hasn't done properly this year because of all the COVID restrictions and blah, blah, blah. And I'm 100%. I know that probably Jorge was not 100% fit. He should have been in much better shape. But and which I'm 100% sure that Carl will be because he is a beast physically. So yeah, pretty exciting move. And yeah, I think Yamaha was clever enough to convince him.
It's Cal's got the right mentality for it. I spoke to him on this on when he first mentioned it, and he said, look, what Yamaha needs is a test rider who's committed to testing. They don't need a test rider who's going to be a test rider but then wants to race in 2022, which was maybe the certainly what Dovizioso wanted, which wouldn't have suited Yamaha. And we know Lorenzo's commitment isn't fully there. So at least from the rider point of view, they've got a guy who is fully committed to the job. And he said as well, look, what I need as well is when I test a bike, I need to have that communication with the riders as well. So he's already thinking about what he needs. And of course, he's tested so much for Honda. I think it's finally Yamaha may get it right. But like you say, they need to get the program sorted. But if anyone's going to lead that program, it's going to be
Cal. I think it's a really good sign for Yamaha. It's a really good sign for Yamaha because, as you say, I mean, in a way, Cal, I'm not comparing them, but can end up being like Pedrosa for KTM. So he's a rider who knows, who's been fast, who's won races and who has a lot of experience and knows what's good and what's not. I think it is a good move from Yamaha.
Yeah, definitely. It came at the right time personally for him. He spoke about this. He has been struggling with injuries and he didn't feel like he could face another 20 odd race season, which is fair enough. He wants to spend more time with his family, which is fair enough. You know, this year especially has been so difficult. I asked him about this and he said, look, I don't want to have to worry every time going home, having to do tests and worry that I'm going to bring home this virus to my family, which you could fully understand and appreciate. And he there was the Aprilia link, but he said they wanted to wait for Iannone. He didn't. And that sounds like a stupid mistake from Aprilia more than anything, because they had a great rider there who wanted to do the project. But
who made a mistake?
Well, you know. Shock. But he said, look, I was been speaking to Aprilia since March and they said, oh, we want to wait for Iannone. And he's like, well, I don't want to wait for Iannone, which fair enough. You know, why wait for a rider that... He was never going to be acquitted if we look at the evidence that the cast released, because it was quite a flimsy case, ultimately. But yeah... I mean, from that point of view, Aprilia has made a big mistake because they could have had a great rider in Cal. And now the situation at Aprilia is weird because they might sign Chaz Davies, which I don't think is a great option, personally.
Well, I would say, yeah, which is surprising is that, I mean, it's not disrespecting, I don't want to respect Chaz, but it is, I mean, all the riders they are trying to convince have said no. So there's something missing in that. I mean, in the end, it's a factory. So you have to maybe rethink your program and try to change things. Otherwise, it's difficult to understand why nobody wants to sign for a Pirelli at the moment.
Yeah, I like you say, no disrespect to Chaz, great superbike rider, but what Aprilia needed was an experienced rider in MotoGP to develop the bike. They're not going to get that. So what they really need then is a young talent who's just fast. So someone like Bezzecchi, who was linked, Digian Antonio maybe. So I don't really see, if that's your options, why would you go for Chaz Davies over a fast Moto2 rider? I don't understand the logic there.
Well, Alex says that they need an experienced rider to help him developing the bike, but in the end, there's no experienced riders available, and Cal and Dobby has said no to Aprilia, which is probably understandable, considering the project they are coming from. And yeah, the fact is that Aprilia has no rider still confirmed, and they are looking into the other markets just to try to find somebody who wants to ride this bike.
I'm sure they'll find someone will want a job. Maybe. I think on that note, Yuri, we'll wrap up there. Thank you very much for your company, as always. You can go and get some sleep now. Thank you to the listeners for your company as well. If you like what you hear, go and listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and all the podcast places. Everything on Autosport, motorsport.com from the Valencia Grand Prix is there for your reading. Like I said, Yuri's spoke to a lot of guys close to Joan Mir, so there's a lot of stuff there to read. I spoke to Cal Crutchlow on the weekend, stuff there for his future to read. So yeah, lots of stuff to keep you interested, and we'll be back next week to discuss what will be the finale of the championship. Cannot believe it. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.